Welcome back, County Citizens. Today I'm with Mr. Steve King, honorable former rep of Iowa's 4th Congressional District. Thank you for being with me.
Thanks for having me on.
So can you tell us a little bit of an overview of what's happening in Iowa with these CO2 pipes?
Well, yes. And last August, about a year ago, President Joe Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act, that misnomered bill that put hundreds of billions of dollars into carbon credits. And carbon credits are companies to capture and sequester CO2. They want to pump it down underground in the oil fields, near the oil fields in North Dakota and in southern Illinois. And so in Iowa, we're in the middle of this. We're the epicenter of ethanol. And in the ethanol production plants that we have, release CO2 in the largest volume of the purest form anywhere known in the world. It's the low-hanging fruit if you're going to capture CO2. This money, these hundreds of billions of dollars, have incentivized two major companies. One of them is BlackRock, who swings a big stick in the World Economic Forum and throughout the Democratic Party here in the United States. That's Larry Fink, the CEO, controlling over $10 trillion in his investment fund. The other one is Bruce Rastetter, an Iowa-born and raised ethanol mogul who was building 6 ethanol plants in Brazil, by the way. Those two have planned 2 pipelines that are about 3,300 miles long altogether, 3,300 miles. The Rastetter pipeline starts in southeast Iowa, and it runs to the northwest, clear up to north of Bismarck, North Dakota, into the oil fields there. And the Larry Fink model of it starts in South Dakota and runs down through Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska also to southern Illinois. 2 pipelines parallel, running in opposite directions of each other, crossing each other 3 times, and they want to use eminent domain to bulldoze their way through the best farmland in the world. That's a summary of it, and that's what our taxpayers would pay for 100% of it. It is all sunk money, all wasted capital, and the dumbest decision I think the federal government's ever made. And it takes away our freedom and our property rights and our constitutional rights, Lindsay.
Mm-hmm. That's a shame. So for somebody who's unfamiliar with this, what exactly do CO2 pipes provide?
Well, it is CO2 is a necessary gas in our atmosphere at about 0.044%, something like that. And we have to have it for photosynthesis. And that's so the corn that surrounds me where I am right now, it sequesters a tremendous amount of carbon, takes the CO2 out of the air, releases the oxygen, so we've got something to breathe. But the purpose of the pipeline is they believe, the environmental extremists, the global warming people, believe that CO2 is the driver of global warming, and so they want to get to carbon neutral. And that means they want to eventually sequester or eliminate the release of, their number is 40 billion metric tons of CO2 a year planet-wide. And they want to get to carbon zero by 2050, and then they want to reduce the CO2 in the atmosphere after that. The cost is astronomical, and it's impossible to reach carbon neutral. But this CO2, it is a gas that's heavier than air. And we actually use it to euthanize hogs in our packing plants, a merciful way to put them to sleep before they go to slaughter. And in concentrations, if there's a leak in a pipeline, that heavier-than-air CO2 would fill the valleys up, and it kills everything that in its reach. So this proposal, it has danger factors to it. There's safety factors they can plug in. They're danger factors. But the idea of this is it takes the CO2 that has no current value that we can turn into methanol and turn as a market product. They would be securing, these two people would have a duopoly, not a monopoly, but a duopoly on the highest quality, largest volume of CO2 in the world. With a pipeline, they could lock that up and they would hold that for decades, and all the other uses for it would be at their discretion.
Wow. What do you think the end goal with this is? Is there a big amount of money on the line?
There's a tremendous amount of money on the line. Congress passed and Biden signed this Inflation Reduction Act, and there are 2 different components of it that affect us. I don't go too deeply into it, but one of them is a 45Q subsidy. The other is a 45Z subsidy. This is all our money, money that we would borrow from places like China, the United Arab Emirates, the Saudis, and to pay for the deficit spending we would have. But the impact of it is that the impact of it is that we would go into this deep, big deficit spending. We would waste all of this CO2 and run our nation into debt. The cost for these two pipelines, actually, there's a third one that's only 280 miles long. Those three together annually, over $17 billion a year. And we're fighting that to defend the property rights. We only have a little bit of money. Might as well say we don't have any money, but we've got grassroots. We formed an organization called FreeSoilCoalition.com. And I've hired an attorney. I've intervened in the litigation process. And tomorrow, I'll be filing my appeal with the district court in Polk County, which is Des Moines, Iowa. So the $17 billion a year, $176 billion in the 10-year congressional budget window, that's just for these pipelines that are in the six states in the upper Midwest. There are others around in the oil fields in the country. It's unbelievable how much money they would pour into this. It'll essentially would break the United States of America to have this kind of a burden. And then on top of that, we have Chinese and Saudi and United Arab Emirate money invested in this up front through BlackRock and through the Summit, which is controlled by Bruce Rastetter. And so they would be invested in this. If they get this done, we'll be paying dividends to the Chinese, the Saudis, and the Emiratis, while at the same time we'll be paying interest in principal to the Chinese, the Saudis, and the Emiratis. And while the Chinese and others are trying to buy up our farmland, especially here in the upper Midwest. So this is a brainchild grown out of Davos, the globalism at the highest form, and people who support it are contributing to the success of their agenda, which is, of course, respects none of our individual liberties, none of our individual freedoms, nor our constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the risks. Can you explain how dangerous these pipelines are?
Well, yes, and I've spent my life in the construction business, so these pipelines will be running at about 2,200 pounds per square inch pressure. It's high pressure. CO2 in the atmosphere just disappears, but as you concentrate it and put pressure on it, it will turn to liquid. And running it under a liquid or a quasi-liquid facility, 2,200 pounds. I know what happens when a hydraulic hose breaks on my excavator and oil blows all over the place, and that's just a little hose. These are pipes that are at least the high side is 24 inches, maybe as high as 30 inches, and so that if it blows, I saw an example video where they had a small pipe, probably a 6-inch, but I couldn't be sure, and they detonated that and videotaped it with a drone so that you could see what would happen if there's a leak in this pipe. And it first started out almost like an atomic blast where it blew a mushroom up, and then it quickly settled down to the ground because it's heavier than air, and spread out. And to give an example of a CO2 release that was very fatal, there's a lake in Cameroon in Africa called Nyos Lake, N-Y-O-S Lake. 1986, there was a natural, I'll call it a natural eruption of CO2 that the pressure had built up under that lake. The lake was about a mile square, not that big a lake, and there were villages around the shores of that lake, at least three of them. When this happened, for about 15 or 20 seconds, there was a rumble, and then that CO2 spread across the lake and around the shoreline, killed everybody in the first village, I think most people in the second village, and in the third village. What I read was there were only two survivors, 1,700 people were killed, all of the cattle, they said thousands of cattle, but every living creature that crawls on the earth is killed by CO2, the insects, the mice, the rats, the cattle, the human beings. So that's what can happen if you have a rupture. So I tried to put this into the context of how do we understand the danger of this here. They do have valves in this pipeline that are supposedly automatic shutoff if there's a pressure change that triggers that. We don't know if they always work, but if they do, they're planning 20 miles between each of those valves. So I took the calculation of a 24-inch pipe, 20 miles long, a valve on either end, and calculated how much CO2 is in there. And that turns out to be over 22 semi-loads, tanker loads, that you see on the road, the liquid tankers on the road. They wouldn't haul them because they wouldn't hold the pressure, but that's the volume. 22 of them all stacked together, detonated simultaneously out of a single rupture. That's the volume that would be released if we had a leak or a break in between that 20-mile stretch. And if you live in a valley, you're not going to get out of there, and you can't get in your car and drive away because it takes oxygen for your car, unless you have an electric vehicle, of course, and that might be one reason to buy one.
Which also goes to emergency vehicles not being able to go to the explosion as fast as people would probably prefer.
No, that is correct. And the counties that have to run the emergency operations that go on here in the Midwest, they've been asking these companies, are you going to provide us electric vehicles? Are you going to provide us air packs? And are you going to train us so how we go into this if we have to go in? And their answer that came back is, well, maybe in some circumstances, but it's possible that you will have to decide who you're going to try to save and who you're going to give up on and let them go. I recall a situation not very far from me 20 years ago where there was a propane tank that had a rupture and a leak, and it was where a Jeep went off the road and hit the tank. The local volunteer fire department rushed in there. The tank was burning. It hadn't exploded at that point. The fire department got there to try to save the people that were there in the wreck, and when they got there, the tank exploded, and it killed two of our firemen. They were fined by the Division of Labor here in the state of Iowa, the fire department was, because they had violated their training recommendations and approached that tank to try to save lives. So that's burned within my conscience. I saw what happened to that community. It was a small community, and it hurts deeply. That's a tiny little thing compared to what we could be looking at.
Mm-hmm. Are private property rights protected by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights?
Well, they're supposed to be. And, you know, I've got a fairly long history with this. I've defended property rights for really all my adult life. But in 2005, there was a Supreme Court decision called Kelo versus New London, Connecticut. And that came down on the wrong side of this issue. The city of New London, Connecticut had condemned the home of Suzette Kelo and her neighbors. They had developed an economic development plan, and they decided that if they would bulldoze all of those homes and hand the property over to a developer, a private sector developer, then they would end up with more tax dollars coming in out of these homes. So they condemned her property and her neighbors. She went to the United States Supreme Court, and the court changed. John Paul Stevens wrote the majority opinion. The court changed the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, which says, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Well, this wasn't for public use. It was for private use, but it was handed through the city's authority. So John Paul Stevens just added two words where it says, nor shall private property be taken for public use. He added really, or a public purpose. And so that distorted the Fifth Amendment. It was a 5-4 decision. Justice Scalia said it is an erroneous decision and it will be reversed one day. In fact, he looked me directly in the eye when he told me that. And so here we are. This decision of 2005, the Kelo decision, is being exploited in a way beyond the imagination of even John Paul Stevens. And so they never imagined that there would be a private sector entity that would come in and want to build altogether 3,300 plus miles of pipeline and bulldoze their way through this property. The cities, but the difference is this. This is a private sector entity. They're not a public sector. They're not a government entity of any kind. And our utility board in the state of Iowa, through, I'll say, omission, acts of commission and omission, it's convoluted, but it gets to the point where the state of Iowa and the governor allows for a 2-member majority on a 3-member appointed commission to confer authority to condemn private property to the pipeline companies for private profit. That's outrageous to me to think that our constitutional rights are simply handed over to two people on a 3-person board, one of whom formed a company named Summit Solutions, and that's the name of Bruce Rastetter's operation, Summit Solutions. So this thing is replete with it's a scheme, and when you look at the politics of it, the 6 governors that are involved here, not one of them have stepped forward to defend the individual property rights of their constituents. And these are 5- and 7-generation farms that are being bulldozed here. So it's an outrageous thing. It's a tremendous violation of our constitutional rights. And I think we end up in the United States Supreme Court.
Wow. For those who might not know, can you explain what eminent domain is?
Yes. Eminent domain is something that's really necessary if you're going to have a functioning country. And our founding fathers understood that. If you want to build, say, a road, for example, and you have somebody that owns a small piece of ground probably, in the middle of that, and they just refuse to sell, but you can look at that public utility, that public access, public use utility, whether it be a road, it might be a natural gas pipeline, it might be an electric line, it could be a water line. If that has a public use and a public use in it, which we're used to those things, and we accept that eminent domain sometimes has to be used to as a taking of private property for public use. And I've been involved in those things and worked hard to avoid using eminent domain to negotiate with the property owners out of respect for constitutional rights. But it is the practice that goes on in nearly every city in America at one time or another. So, but we're protected in our property rights from private sector stepping in and condemning our property up until now. If we don't defend this, there'll be a precedent that will spread across this country and nobody's land will be protected. And if they have that authority to condemn our property, a takings, an eminent domain takings of our property for a pipeline, by the same standards, they could put a wind turbine up in your front yard. They could put solar panels on your roof. And there's nothing that they couldn't do if they have more politics and more money than, I'll say, we individual people of the United States of America.
Good here.
Can you tell us again, please, what you're doing to work against these CO2 pipelines?
Yes. On Saturday, the 8th of July, I hired an attorney to represent me before the Iowa Utilities Board as an intervener. And so then I've now moved through a series of processes. They turned down my intervention and said I had other ways to defend my constitutional rights. They didn't tell me what they are. And in fact, I don't know that they exist on this issue. So we appealed that. They turned down my appeal. And then I formed a group of interveners, 8 interveners. They're called the King Interveners. We went back to the utility board to intervene. They turned down all of our applications, and then they turned down the appeal of that. And so, as I said, tomorrow then I will go to district court in Polk County, and that's a stop perhaps before the Iowa Supreme Court. And behind that, we'll have to go to federal court because they're not going to let us win with $17 billion against us. But forming the organization is the most essential part of this. I mean, I can't do all of this alone. I'm far from the richest person in the world, let alone I'm one of the poorer members who served the United States Congress. But I'm putting some of my life savings on the line here, and I'm asking others to step up together. So we've formed the Free Soil Coalition, freesoilcoalition.com. We have an executive director. His name is Trent Luce. He's out of Nebraska. He's a radio and a podcast personality in about 40 states. And he has stepped forward also. And we've had at least 2 public meetings by now. We'll have more. The next ones will be outside of Iowa, in either Illinois, South Dakota, maybe North Dakota, because we want this to be knit together. We have an executive council. And we have put together almost all of this now, 2 on the executive council from each of the participating states. And then we'll have a board of directors that are placed there because of their skill sets and their volunteer energy. So we have grassroots, and we're looking to add to it other associations that are committed to constitutional rights and property rights. And this coalition isn't to benefit anybody in it. No, right now, nobody's taking a salary out of it. We don't have enough money for that. We're the dedicated people that stand on principle, and we know we're called to this task. And I'll tell you that the kind of people that I really learned to enjoy and love working with have emerged to step forward on this. It is a terrific group of people, and I know I'm called to fight this task. Win or lose, there's a joy in the battle. And I often finished my morning prayers with, please loan me the measure of your Lord, loan me the measure of your wisdom that you'd have me use this day to go forth and glorify you, and may I do so with joy. And most of these days that prayer is answered, I get to do this with joy.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. But for the citizens like myself, right, who live very, very far from Iowa, how can we get engaged to stop the efforts of these pipelines?
Well, I'd say go to freesoilcoalition.com. And there's going to be a button on there. If it's not there today, it'll be there very soon to make a donation to us, because our coffers are really close to empty. And that can go to pay for some of our expenses in putting our events together, and also for the legal fees, which I just negotiated some of those yesterday, and kind of makes me swallow a little hard. But any kind of donation like that would help. If you have friends or relation in any of these states, the Dakotas, Nebraska, especially Southwest Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, friends, relation, call them. Tell them to go to freesoilcoalition.com. and let's build this organization that hopefully our name will be on a lawsuit that gets to the United States Supreme Court. And anybody that has a friend or relation that wants to join in the litigation that we have here as a plaintiff, if they have land especially, that's here, that's crossed by the pipeline, be part of that too. So, and then, and you look around your own neighborhoods and talk to people about this so that they know. If this were going on in the country and I didn't know about it, I'd be very disappointed. And I've been asked to make this presentation other places nationally. I'll certainly do that. But I want America to wake up and understand what's going on. Also, we have the presidential race going on. And here we are in Iowa, first in the nation caucus. And that's the voice that we really need, is that every one of these presidential candidates need to take a stand on whether they're going to defend the property rights or whether they're going to team up with the globalists and Larry Fink and Klaus Schwab and George Soros. And by the way, globalist Bruce Rastetter and Summit. One side or the other, these presidential candidates need to be on. And so we're gonna ask them, we'll ask other people to ask them, what's your stand? Is it with constitutional property rights or is it with the globalists? That's a decision. By the way, we have some people that say it's good versus evil. I believe that too.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out. Well, Mr. King, thank you so much for being with me. It's been very educational, and I hope our listeners enjoy it just as much as I did.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you, Lindsay.